The scripture reading comes from John's depiction of the baptism of Jesus. And this takes place the day after the baptism.
The next day, John again was standing with two of his disciples. And as he watched Jesus walk by, he exclaimed, "Look, here is the Lamb of God." The two disciples heard him say this, and they followed Jesus. When Jesus turned and saw them following, he said to them, "What are you looking for?" They said to him, "Rabbi," which means translated means teacher, "where are you staying?" He said to them, "Come and see." They came and saw where he was staying, and they remained with him that day. It was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. One of the two who heard John speak and followed him was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. He first found his brother Simon and said to him, "We have found the Messiah," which is translated anointed. He brought Simon to Jesus, who looked at him and said, "You are Simon, son of John. You are to be called Cephas," which is translated Peter. The next day, Jesus decided to go to Galilee. He found Philip and said to him, "Follow me." Now Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, "We have found him about whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus, son of Joseph from Nazareth." Nathanael said to him, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" Philip said to him, "Come and see."
Thank you so much. So Jesus asks John the Baptist's disciples, "What are you looking for?" I would be terrified if I got asked that. How would you answer? If Jesus looks at you and said, "What are you looking for?" I'd be all, Because my answer would honestly be, it depends on what day it is. Some days, to be honest, I'm just looking for the stamina and the creativity to make it through all the tasks in front of me and the patience to not bite off the head of someone who's just pushed all my buttons or just been in the wrong place at the wrong time. Sometimes we're just trying to get through the day. That's what I'm looking for. But underneath that, I believe there is something in each of us that is looking for something deeper. There's something in us that is looking for connection. Connection with others, connection with the world around us, connection with God. Connected to the young people's message, connection is not safe, but it's good. What are we looking for? Our culture is happy to tell us what we should be looking for, and I don't need to do the laundry list that a sermon like this is supposed to give you, but it's stuff. But I think the fact that you're here on a Sunday morning means that you're looking for something more than stuff and stuff. You're looking for something to believe in and to hold on to. You're looking for something important enough to live for and not just to exist for. Something big enough to claim your passion, demand your devotion, engage your faith. You're looking for an anchor to hold you in the storms, but also for a sail to push you to new places. We all want our stories to be part of a larger story. We want our lives to have some meaning. We are looking for a purpose, a challenge to be more than we are now. We're looking for God. We want to know God. We want to be known by God. That also is dangerous, but good. I guess that's what it is for me. What I'm looking for. I want to be part of the good that God is doing in the world. I want to be part of the unfolding story of love and life and grace and justice that God is doing in the most unexpected places on this planet. And I want to be a part of that. Part of that unfolding story. Now, tomorrow we celebrate the birthday of a man who was a transforming figure in that unfolding story in our nation's history. I gotta say, I've always been a little bit nervous about having a federal holiday for the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I completely understood and supported the emotions underneath it. And I was very angry with the arguments of people who were against it brought forth. But here's my reasons why I'm nervous about it. A holiday shrink wraps the dangerous ideas of King and makes them safe for popular consumption. A holiday takes the rabble-rousing prophet of God who threatened the powers of racism and militarism and economic inequity and muzzles those ideas so that people don't lose sleep over them. It takes that complex flesh and blood man of faith and foibles and tames him, transforms him into a safe marble statue with an iconic dream. His whole ministry gets shrunk to one speech on the Washington Mall, which frankly gets us off the hook from doing that kind of ministry ourselves, because when all we see is the marble statue with the unreachable dream, we all go, oh, he was king, he was made of marble, he was a saint. Someone like me can't do that work. He was walking a few feet above the ground. I want to read a short excerpt from King's autobiography. And it's a corrective to any ideas that King was made of marble or steel or walked 2 inches above the ground. The night he writes of was a critical night. It was Friday, January 27th, 1956. King was slumping home dejected after a grueling strategy session under his belt, and he found Coretta asleep. And he writes this. One night toward the end of January, I settled into bed late after a strenuous day. Coretta had already fallen asleep. And just as I was about to doze off, the telephone rang. an angry voice said, "Listen, nigger, we've taken all we want from you. Before next week, you'll be sorry you ever came to Montgomery." I hung up, but I couldn't sleep. It seemed that all my fears had come down on me at once. I had reached the saturation point. I got out of bed and began to walk the floor. Finally, I went to the kitchen and heated up a pot of coffee. I was ready to give up. With my cup of coffee sitting untouched before me, I tried to think of a way to move out of the picture without appearing a coward. In this state of exhaustion, when my courage had all but gone, I decided to take my problems to God. With my head in my hands, I bowed over the kitchen table and prayed aloud. The words I spoke to God that midnight are still vivid in my memory. "I am here taking a stand for what I believe is right, but now I am afraid. The people are looking to me for leadership, and if I stand before them without strength and courage, they too will falter. I am at the end of my powers. I have nothing left. I have come to the point where I can't face it alone." At that moment, I experienced the presence of the divine as I had never experienced him before. It seemed as though I could hear the quiet assurance of an inner voice saying, "Stand up for righteousness. Stand up for truth. And God will be at your side forever." Almost at once, my fears began to go. My uncertainty disappeared. I was ready to face anything. 3 days later, a bomb blasted through King's house, and his family escaped harm by a hair's breadth. "Strangely enough," King later wrote, "I accepted the word of the bombing calmly. My experience a few nights before had given me the strength to face it." King had the same sleepless nights that you do and I do. The same fear of being seen badly by others. The same insecurities, the same weaknesses. Okay, here's where I get to disappoint you this morning. A stock Martin Luther King Day sermon is supposed to go like this: Jesus had a vision for the kingdom. He invited us to come and see what it is to live today as citizens of this slowly unfolding kingdom of peace. And the stock Martin Luther King Day sermon says that Martin Luther King had a dream of a beloved community, and he invites us to live today as the universe slowly bends toward justice. And the stock sermon says, "We aren't there yet, but we're working on it. It's coming. It's inevitable. Just wait for it." And here's the thing, and here's why I can't do a stock MLK sermon today. I don't believe that anymore. I have a deep unease about who we are as a nation over the last 12 months. Not just a toxic election, not just the killings of people of color, not just the degradation and the risk to the environment, not just Aleppo, not just the thousand other things that have been weighing heavy on our minds. But rather, this year it seems troublingly obvious that the beloved community that King spoke of is not something we move toward inevitably. It is not something we move toward without deep spiritual struggle on each of our parts. It is not inevitable. We cannot count on Washington or Wall Street moving us toward dignity for all God's children. It's not there because the beloved community is costly. Wall Street won't do it because there's no profit involved. And Washington won't do it because there's no power involved. And a marble statue of King won't do it because it requires flesh and blood. It requires people. It requires you and me. And it requires sacrifice. And it requires discomfort. And it requires spiritual depth. And it requires mutual vulnerability. And a holiday gives us none of that. It just gives us a day off and some recordings of one speech on the Washington Mall. We need something more. Jesus asks us, what are you looking for? Jesus asked King that night. And King's answer was you. And our answer to Jesus asking that question of us has to be you, Jesus. And his invitation to come and see where he is staying, how he is living, is that something more we need that we are not going to get from anybody in power. Accepting his invitation to come and see can open us up to the divine presence and quiet assurance that King experienced when his uncertainty disappeared. A federal holiday and a marble statue will not redeem the world. Each of us, hearing and answering the invitation to come and see as King did, and following in his footsteps on the rocky, narrow path of discipleship as King did, becoming strong enough in faith to be vulnerable to human evil as King was, that will be part of God's redeeming the world. And our saying yes to all that will be our part in God's plan to redeem the world. It's not inevitable. But with you all, and a billion other people of goodwill, it can happen. I want to show you a video, a 3-minute video that's going around the interwebs right now. The person you'll see is a tenor in the Chicago Metropolitan Opera. He's also a Muslim, and he knows what it is to be looked at suspiciously, to be degraded by politicians, and to be seen as other every day. Take a look at what he did. This is him singing in the background. To you. On his sign he wrote, "I hope that I am safe with you." The irony for those of us who claim to follow Jesus is that that is the one thing that was never promised us in following Jesus. He never said, "Follow me and I will make you safe." He said, "Follow me and I will make you fishers of folk. Follow me and take up your cross." But we have the promise that our vulnerability, our being unsafe but good, can make others feel safe. Then we can, as another part of his sign said, build a community of caring rather than one of fear. That we can trust each other to care for each other no matter what we look like or where we are from. And when his sign asks, "Will you embrace me as willingly as I embrace you?" we can say, "Yes." I'm not sure what the future holds, brothers and sisters, for our nation, for our churches. I suspect discomfort is coming and is probably long overdue, because change isn't comfortable. But we also know that Jesus is walking it with us if we just look and follow. And when he says, "Come and see," if you say yes, your heart will open. Your life will change. And the world will heal a little bit.